Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Okay, so well, let's get jiggy with
it. All right.
Do you remember that song, Will Smith?
Getting jiggy with it. No, I'm singing it.
Getting jiggy with it.
With something else, but I don't know what. Yes, I do remember that song with Will Smith. Moral of the story. Why hasn't Will Smith written a musical?
Will somebody get us another drink?
Welcome to Jim and Tomic's Musical Theatre Happy Hour, your weekly podcast with soda and showboating.
Oh, I like that one. Is that from the internet?
No, that's an original. It's an original Jeremy Mitchell. I'm literally going to do it till I've squeezed my brain out, and then we can peel from the internet. But thank you to the people who gave us suggestions.
We're keeping a list. They will be used.
We're checking it twice.
Gonna find out who's podcasting nice.
Hey, because none of y'all are naughty. What are you drinking today, Mr. T?
Today, I am drinking a gin and tonic with just the gin. Did I do that in a good voice? That was close.
Was that supposed to be like your film?
Yeah, did you not hear the like saxophone in the background?
Sax in the back?
Yeah. Exactly. She had legs that kept on going, and the only thing that stopped them was the floor.
That was the floor. I'm drinking Pinot Noir. I thought you would get that.
No,
I thought you would get
no,
that.
No, that's good. That's clever. I like that more than mine. Yeah.
Thank you. Shout out to Titus Burgess. Mm-hmm. Right.
Why?
What are we going on about?
Well,
what's this?
Well, I'll tell you. In the song, okay. Beautiful City from Godspell, lies the title of this, the musical we're going to talk about this week. What music?
And it's not Pale.
It's not Pale. I did enjoy it. Someone commented and said, are they just trolling us? Are they just going to do Beautiful, the Carole King musical? And I was like, ooh, yeah. That would have been good. But no, we're not. We're doing City of Angels.
Three million people in the City of Angels, according to the last census. Easily half of them up to something they don't want the other half to know. We all get sucked in by the lobby. Palm trees finger the sky, and there's enough sunshine to lay some off on Pittsburgh. But that's all on top. L.A., truth to tell, is not much different than a pretty girl with the clap.
Yes, we are the City of Angels, not the city, just City of. Los Angeles,
LA.
LA.
LA in the 40s.
Do you have any other names?
Hollywood Land.
Because you know it's like the big smoke.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Apple.
I'm going to try and say this without vomiting. La La Land. I did it.
La La Land. Well done. Congratulations. Notice how nobody cares about that anymore.
Right?
So, City of Angels. Uh-huh. Music by the wonderful Cy Coleman.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to our first Cy Coleman musical.
Yeah, who knew it would take us this long? Cy Coleman feels like he's like second string musical theater. I love Cy Coleman, not to put him down, mm-hmm. but there's, you know, mm-hmm. Andrew Lloyd, you got your Webbers, your Sondheims, your Schwartzes, mm-hmm. you know, like your Kaufman and Hartz. And then like,
yeah,
Coleman is further down on the list. He's written things you know about, but you don't know that he wrote them.
Yeah, he's like dancing around with like Lesser and other people.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's so fab. Wrote hits as such as Sweet Charity,
mm-hmm.
Barnum. Love me some Barnum.
Mm-hmm.
The Life, currently enjoying its first West End premiere.
Really?
Despite the fact it was written in the 80s, yeah.
Huh, who knew? You said Sweet Charity. Will Rogers' Follies. That's a big one.
Yes, indeedo. Won that Tony Award. Yeah. So yeah, he's good. He's legit, guys.
Yeah,
he's legit.
Right, good.
And we also discovered that he wrote what song was that?
What is it? The song Witchcraft. It's Witchcraft. And The Best Is Yet to Come, a Frank Sinatra standard.
There you go. He's good, guys. He's good. We also have lyrics by Mr. David Zippel. I'm gonna say Zippel.
Let's go with that.
And he wrote the lyrics for Hercules and, get this, Mulan.
Really?
Yeah, man.
David Zippel made a man out of us.
He did. Like, that's great. Who knew that? I mean, probably a lot of people. But I think that's so cool because they're good.
Yeah.
They're good. I mean, Hercules.
Yeah.
That's got some great lyrics.
No, it's an interesting cross because like Cy Coleman comes from old musical theater, you know, golden agey kind of feeling sort of stuff. His stuff is more edgy than some of the more traditional golden age stuff. But then
definitely
with Zippel with the more contemporary lyrical twist of like pop Disney movies, mm-hmm. it's an interesting combo.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think it's weird. Like Zippel kind of pulls from the contemporary in terms of obviously content.
Yeah.
But he has that really strong tongue-in-cheek style of someone like Irving Berlin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? With that really high comedy factor.
Yeah, especially.
Very witty.
Yeah. Very witty. Very witty lyrics. Very clever lyrics. Yeah.
Very clever lyrics. And I do think this is interesting because you don't get many.
Mm-hmm.
Also the books by Larry Gilbert who wrote one of my all-time favorite movies. Do you know what that is, Tommy?
No.
Go, Tootsie, go.
You're doing a thing that's supposed to make
sweet.
Me...
You've figure, not seen Tootsie.
Figure out what you're talking about and...
You've not seen Tootsie. You call yourself a show queen and you've not seen Tootsie.
Number one,
I've not seen Tootsie.
Number one, I do not call myself a show queen. Number two, I've not seen Tootsie.
Oh my god!
I like that.
Right,
you
please.
I like that you call it Tootsie.
Because you've not seen, as opposed to what? Tootsie.
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 Tootsie. No, Tootsie, because it's an ooh sound. Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah, no, I know of the movie. I have just not seen the movie.
Jessica Lange. Great. What I'm gonna do? I'm gonna fly over there and just bring a selection of like gay movies.
I'm excited.
And I'm gonna re-gay you.
You know, I have to retest to get my gay card recertified.
Yeah, yeah. You need to take the test anyway, so you may as well.
Might as well.
They've really upped the game because
I know
it's getting harder.
We've got high standards.
It's really competitive these days. It's really competitive.
That's what I hear.
So, anyway, talking about people, it's interesting because you very rarely get someone on each.
Right. Yeah.
Right? Normally it's like, oh, I'll do music and lyrics, you do book,
mm-hmm.
or I've got all three.
Yeah.
Very rarely, I think, do you get...
There's
not very rarely, but It's less common, well, I think.
I think even three of all the combinations is less common, because you get a lot of duos, you get a lot of singletons, or you get a lot of like music and lyrics and book with additional music and lyrics by so-and-so.
Yeah, exactly. Like people having a hand in. Yeah.
Or then you end up with these like Disney amalgamations that have 16 authors because someone wrote the movie and someone wrote the plot of the movie and someone wrote the original novel that Mary Poppins is based on, and then they brought in a new team to co-write, and all of a sudden the poster is filled with people's names.
Exactly. But what these three chaps have done are create a completely original musical.
Yeah.
And that's I think that's really impressive. Like, each of them are kind of masters of their own craft, and they really are. Like, they have lots of, you know, their CV is strong.
Yes.
And here they have come together to create a complete original work.
Yeah.
So let's talk about it. Let's see what its history is.
Yeah.
Where did it all begin, Tommy?
So this musical started, it opened on Broadway in 1989, ran for a couple years. Did okay, mildly popular. And then it won the
Tony for
best best musical. It won, I think it won book and score as well.
Book and score as well. So there you go. If you needed more, more testament to the fact that, that it was good.
And so then it had a couple West End productions, one in 93 that didn't, that I guess didn't do too well.
It didn't really shake. So, but not, critically, like critically it was really warmly received, was a hit at the Olivier Awards, won the Olivier for best musical, best actor, amongst other, I think best director as well. Like, it really, really did well. But for reasons which we probably will discuss in a little moment, it didn't explode. Which is very disappointing. But yeah, so they just revived it recently in 2014. Again, quite successfully, but it was only a limited run at the Donmar. So there you go. Yeah,
never revived on Broadway, of all things.
Never revived on Broadway.
Yeah, for a best musical, I mean, that's basically it. The Broadway production, the two West End productions, and then, you know, a couple of regional and local productions here and there. But never a tour, never a revival, nothing off Broadway, nothing off West End. Which is strange for a contemporary best musical winner, you know? These shows get second lives all over the place.
Absolutely. So we're going to try and peel apart why that's happening in a little bit. But let's tell you what it's all about.
Yeah.
So really, it's a proper homage, a proper love letter to the classic film noir genre of the 1940s. It's from the get-go, from the first stinky saxophone that you've got. you get transported to that black and white, long-shadowed, sexy, sultry era.
And we're following the story of Stone, who's a private investigator, and it's every stereotype to the nines, you know.
Absolutely.
Sexy girl walks in. You have your
femme fatale.
Yep. He's got his girl Friday, his secretary. And then
he's a PI, he's doing a voiceover.
And then the action freezes, and you hear the backspace button on a typewriter, and the actors go back in time, and is revealed Stein, the author, who is writing this film noir book as we are watching it.
Exactly. So yeah, he's been commissioned to turn one of his, he's a novelist, and he's commissioned to turn one of his novels into a film. And he's very excited about this prospect, because as we all know from our Merrily We Roll Along days, that's, LA is the place to go if you want to make money, unless you're in Sunset Boulevard, in which case you will probably fail. But if you're in Merrily We Roll Along, you're going to do really well. So he's very excited about making a lot of money. He's kind of sacrificed his relationship with his wife. She's way back in New York. And it's kind of all about how he gets shafted by LA.
Yeah, it's also on the LA story side. I would also say it's pretty stereotypical, like a producer who wants to make all the changes, you know, and doesn't have quite the respect for the art, but is super popular. So how dare you cross him?
Exactly. And it feels like there's some real beef there.
Yes.
I don't know whether it's from Larry Gelbart or maybe a kind of a mix of all three of them might have experienced this along the way, but of this like the producers and the directors meddling in my story.
Right, how dare they?
Kind of idea. Yeah. Which is, you know, it happens all the time.
And then, of course, the shtick of the whole show, which is really what it's known for, is we're seeing both of these stories kind of develop at the same time. And all of the film noir Stone stories are presented, quote unquote, in black and white. And so all the cast members are in like very monochromatic outfits and like the set pieces are black and white. And then the LA script writing story is in color. And the interplay between those two is where the cleverness and the comedy and the intelligence of this musical comes from.
Yeah, completely. And the end of Act One, it all kind of gets thrown in its head as magic happens and Stone interacts with his author, Stein, and that kind of leads the way for the rest of the show. So really, that's an interesting concept.
It's really clever. It is baffling to me that it is original. That like they came up with this. It's so layered to start out with. In my musical theater assumption world, I assume, well, of course you started with a story and then added this clever twist onto it, but no, everything's written from the ground up.
Completely.
And like the cleverness, I think the shtick of watching the thing that someone's writing is done every once in a while. You see it in film sometimes, it happens in Drowsy Chaperone, like you see those sorts of things all the time, but to really, really dive into it and have duets between characters in the story and out of the story, and every actor save for Stone and Stein plays pretty much a character and a representation of themselves inside the film noir story. That's super clever.
So why does it never get performed? Let's find out after this.
Mr. Detective, you've been looking too hard. You should have started looking in your own for Mallory. Wanna play lost and found? Well then, here I am on the lam. You've been assigned to find out.
Okay, so
I've
what's going on?
Yeah, it's a good question. I enjoy listening to this show. I imagine watching the show is actually probably more enjoyable than listening to this show because it has the visual gags and it is I would say a true on comedy. But I think why it didn't do too well is because it's not particularly stunning in any of its individual execution things. It's very like once explored, it's quaint.
Dig further.
Okay.
What do you mean by quaint? Sorry.
What's the moral of this musical?
Well, that's, I think, an interesting thing in its own right. Because by the end of the show, it flips the whole film noir idea on its head.
Right.
Because one of the key features of film noir is that they often don't have happy endings. They're often really melancholic, quite dark towards the end.
The private eye gets shot.
Normally someone's dead. In the case of something like Sunset Boulevard, he's already dead from the get-go.
Ends up in the pool.
And very rarely do you end with a lovely big happy ending, which is exactly what City of Angels is about. Right. And I think that it plays into the hands of kind of what was happening to Stein,
right?
And that his producer was being like, let's make it a lovely happy
ending. Let's change it. And then
this is what people want,
right?
And it's got almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah,
that.
But I mean, that, I guess
ends
that,
up being a happy ending.
That's kind of what I feel, because that doesn't. That feels accident. That feels unintentional. I don't think they're trying to say something there. I think they're trying to end their musical.
I wouldn't go to the show to be like ready to get my life changed. Right. Do you know what I mean? It's to me, it's a really just enjoyable conceit with lots of enjoyable little bits and bobs in it.
But
you know?
I think that's why it's not terribly successful. You know, music, like, people don't go out humming the scenery. And this is a show based around the scenery. There's catchy tunes in this, but there aren't tunes you play on the radio. There's catchy tunes in this, but they're not tunes that stand outside of the show. The plot is kind of quaint and I wouldn't say meandering, but like, we're not taken on an epic journey here to there. There's even not a really specific, like, this is the conflict, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like, that makes...
I would agree that definitely there's lots, it's quite convoluted. It's a very intricate story.
Yeah.
You know, there's about like 40 different scene changes, which in its own right is mental. And I would say, definitely very intricate, but you can't, well, I don't know, I feel it's a shame to say that for City of Angels, you know, you don't deserve to do well because your book is a bit complicated. When, if you think about all of the other musicals that don't have a polished book, which is, you know, I would say more than half of the musical theatre genre doesn't have a polished book and yet can still maintain levels of success. Because I think you only need to look at, you know, someone like Andrew Lloyd Webber,
right?
Who is, you know, someone like Cats, okay? Yeah, I know I'm Cats trash, but it's, you know, show me the good plot. Do you know what I mean? That you have there.
I would challenge the Cats comparison because Cats is so out there. But take something like Phantom, which has a million different characters and a bunch of different subplots, but Phantom, you can plug your ears and look at and be like, yes, bad guy, good guy, lady. Like, you know, you can walk through the simplest explanation of the plot on it. Whereas, like, City of Angels has a really interesting plot, and it took us several minutes to kind of get through. And, you know, we still haven't talked about anything that happens to Stone, the private investigator, mostly because it's, like, not really important or pivotal to the plot. And then the stuff that happens to Stein is, to me at least, as boring and uninteresting as some of the plot in La La Land, where it's like, I get it, life is hard, art's a struggle, blah, 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 oh, you poor thing. And, like, don't get me wrong, I still enjoy this show, but I think that's why, like, there's nothing... You know, what do you put on the poster of City of Angels? Not knowing the branding of it, there's not a good thing to point at that this show is about or represented by. And like,
so you think it's just not marketable? You think that's why it's never been picked up again?
I think so. Maybe that's the point I'm trying to make.
And
like, not marketable comes down to a couple things. Like, not marketable because there's nothing to market. Not marketable because it's complicated, because like the plot of Into the Woods is complicated, but you know, Sondheim holds your hand through it. The plot of this is complicated, is almost unnecessarily complicated at points, maybe. I don't know.
I think definitely towards the end of the second act, but I think that is just a kind of fault of the show. But again, I would say that it's got many friends in the musical theatre oeuvre that share that exact same trait of that tricky second act. We've talked about it before, you know?
Yeah, second acts are hard.
That they're very, very tough. And yet, you know, you see a lot of them over and over and over again.
Right.
I have a couple of theories as to why
it didn't
land. One of them is timing.
Okay.
So if we look at Broadway in this time, this time period, so obviously it was 1989 that it opened. What are we just about to get? We're about to get the unveiling of Andrew Lloyd Webber to the world in the takeover of AL Dubs. So again, we've talked about this to the death about kind of why Android Web was so successful and da 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 da. And, you know, there were always these kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Casualties that kind of sit here because of the timing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think it is really, because one of the main reasons we always said about Android Webber taking over is because of the dearth that the 80s AIDS crisis created in the gay community. Yeah. A lot of the gay community were writers for the theatre. But yet here we have, you know, three stalwarts of the theatre creating a completely original piece of work that is really great and really solid. And even, you know, I would say beats Cats down to the ground. Yeah. And yet it just doesn't get a look in. So I can imagine by its second year on Broadway, people were just getting ready for this mega musical.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The birth of the mega musical was happening. And so this more kind of, it's not a concept musical, but it's fun. It's fun. Do you know what I mean?
It's that, fun, it's very old school, golden agey.
It's really got that vibe, doesn't it? And so they kind of weren't here for that anymore. And so it faded into dust. And I would think that's exactly what happened in the West End. I know a fair amount of critics kind of believe that, and that this was the kind of birth of the idea that the West End audience is a little bit dumber than the Broadway audience, and you know, just wants to go see a nice simple lark, as opposed to what he's a character and he's a book, and I don't, what are you? You're the same person, you're different.
Right.
I have to think.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And you know, at the time, maybe the West End audience wasn't here for that because they wanted their Miss Saigons and their Evitas and their blah blah blah, Les Mises and blah blah blah. So I think it was a casualty of its time.
Yeah.
Now when it comes to tours, we mentioned that it's never really had many successful tours, if any. It's a very complex musical to stage.
Yes, it is. Yes, it very much is.
Right?
Because there are two worlds that have nothing in common and have some very specific requirements.
Yep.
To like
very, very specific. Yeah.
And like otherwise the shtick doesn't convey.
Exactly. And it is a shtick. I would 100% submit to that, that it is a, oh, come and see this cool thing that we do.
Right. Yeah. In the same way, you know, come watch us crash a chandelier on the stage. Like I don't think like, we're in an art form that's above that.
I ain't penalizing it because it's a cool shtick. Yeah. It's very, very cool. And I love it. So that would make it very difficult to just pack up in a box and travel around the country with. As well, orchestra wise, you'd have to be an extremely talented orchestrator to dumb this down and still get that vibe.
Yep. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That big, strong 1940s schmaltzy vibe.
Yep.
And obviously you ain't having an orchestra when you're touring.
Right.
So,
what are you gonna do?
Yeah. So I think there's lots of these different reasons. I don't know. There may be something else. People might just secretly hate Cycle because it's the same. It's almost the same with The Life as well.
His stuff like just never
we've
quite...
only just got The Life on the West End,
and
it's been out since 1990.
He never breaks free of something.
Yeah, there is something. There is a little something.
Yeah,
and I don't know because I almost kind of feel the same with Barnum.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know, like, there's a little something where I'm just like, oh, what is that?
Yeah, why?
What is that?
Is it marketing? Or, you know, maybe it's the sort of thing, who knows? We're not biographers, but maybe they're, you know, maybe Cy's very stuck in the decisions he makes. And, like, there is that room for that little improvement during production that never happens.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe, you know, or, you know, we're putting a lot of the weight on Cy. Maybe it was Gilbert. Who, you know, was playing into his Stein role and was like, I ain't touching this book.
Yeah.
Girl, this is perfect. Perhaps. I don't know. I just find it really, really interesting because, you know, we talk a lot about, oh, there's no original musicals. There's no original musicals. Here's an original musical that's very good.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Right. And never made it anywhere. Yeah.
And everyone's like, what is it?
Yeah.
City of Angel? LA?
But I feel like I really do, you know, maybe this is one of our hashtag patented disagreements. I like this musical. I think it's very good. I think there's lots of room for improvement. I think it's, despite how much we've gone on and on about it being complex, the characters are pretty simplistic. They're pretty one-dimensional. I don't feel like any of the characters in either of the story happened before the show or continue to happen after the show, obviously.
Right.
And that, you know, whereas like the baker from Into the Woods goes on living his life completely changed and like has a whole and like had a whole past that brought him into this show. And some of that I think comes from the basis of non-original musicals. Is like you have a whole story and a back, you know, we saw it with all our Great Comet interviews about like when you have all of War and Peace to set up your character, you have so many things you can develop and pull on, and like it creates these deep, deep, multifaceted characters. Whereas with something like this, where all you have is the text of the libretto, there's some shallowness there that maybe doesn't end up written down in a New York Times review, but I think is felt by Joe Tourist when he comes in to see this kind of show. It's like, oh, what a fun night.
Yeah. But I don't think it ever calls out to being a big hitter in that respect. I don't think it's ever trying to say, I'm going to be in Into the Woods.
Right.
I think it's trying to say, I'm a Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, or I'm a something similar. I'm a Catch Me If You Can. I'm a Drowsy Chaperone, even.
But,
do you know what I mean?
But even those, maybe Drowsy Chaperone aside, but Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, those characters have passed and are interesting and like...
Yeah, but it's because based on...
I think that's the problem. Maybe, I don't know, is that it doesn't have a basis. And so it almost feels like when I'm writing my book, How to Write an Original Musical, the first step is to go not write a musical and then turn that into a musical. Like, figure out a really fleshed out, deep down, well thought out story before you ever pull out, you know, your blank score sheet. Make sure these characters are real, are three-dimensional, have, you know, families and grudges and gripes, and then pull the, you know, find the 3 days that make up your musical and just pull those pieces.
Okay. Yeah, I do definitely see what you mean. I would say it has too many characters.
Yes.
There's lots and lots of characters here, but then it all fits into the film noir genre.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because these, if you think of something like... The Maltese Falcon, which is like one of the only film noirs I've seen.
It's a good one to choose,
like classic ones. Yeah, that you, again, you don't at the end of that film, you're not like, gosh, what would you know their lives after that? You're just like, and there was that yarn, and it's done.
Right?
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like it fits into its own box really well.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I think it does, and. It is a really enjoyable night.
Yes.
And again, this is the two sides of the coin that we sit on. I don't mind going for a nice, enjoyable night at the theater.
Right. I often want to be challenged. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think, you know, I would say that you as Mr. Challenge are more in the minority. Do you know what I mean? Like most audience goers do just want to go and have a nice night.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? A nice, enjoyable night. So why wouldn't they like City of Angels? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like, you know, I think of people like my mom who are probably in the nice, enjoyable night kind of camp. But I still think they have a more enjoyable night when they can still leave the theater and be like, oh, yeah, we can talk about this thing. Or like, how interesting, you know, like very plot point sort of stuff.
Right.
Even if it's Beauty and the Beast or something really simplistic, like there's still, I don't know.
don't know, you're not going to leave Beauty and the Beast being like, right, so let's have the chat and about the debate about bestiality.
Right, but you're also not going to leave Beauty and the Beast being like, oh, golly gee, what a nice fluffy night of fun. Like, Beauty and the Beast is a story about love and romance and, you know, the challenges of exterior ugliness and, like, whether you can fall in love with someone's heart or someone's face. Like, that's the whole Gaston Beast sort of thing. Like, that's deep down inside of Beauty and the Beast. And
But then would you not leave this being like, you know, the Hollywood machine, are you going to fall into that, you know,
I mean,
greed pattern? Are you going to try and fight against that?
Yeah. The moral of City of Angels pretty much seems to be like, gosh, Hollywood sucks. The only way to get out of it is to pretend. You know, there's not like a, and here's how Stein saved his book. Like, not believably. It's funny. It's a big ol'. It's literally a punchline. But it's not, you know, it's a cop out. It's a deus ex machina. And I guess I have problems with that, I think. It's still very much developing in my mind. This is a musical where, like, I like it and I shouldn't, you know? Through analysis, through talking about it, this doesn't check the boxes that I normally like to check with a musical.
Yeah.
But it's still one I recommend. Think
the sum of its parts make it really great.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? I really do, because I think the music, and we'll get on to talk about this in a bit, actually. In fact, let's talk about it right now.
All right.
Let's talk music.
Here we go.
It's funny. Who could top or make this comic opera more compelling? You could weave in some deceit to even up the score.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.
I think the music of this show is really fantastic and some of Cy Coleman's best work.
Yes.
He's such an odd one.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've already kind of teased this already, but I remember like the first time I ever saw Sweet Charity and I was just like, what is this? And yeah, it was one of those, it like planted a little earworm.
Uh-huh.
In my head, and I was like, okay, I need to listen to that again, please. And then suddenly I find myself listening to it on repeat and repeat and repeat and picking out bits because it just sits there.
Yeah.
Exact same thing happened with Barnum.
Yeah.
I kind of grew mentally obsessed with Barnum. And City of Angels, again, the same kind of thing. Not across the board, something like Barnum, like, you know, I could listen to Barnum forever. I think this has ebbs and flows, but I love its ebbs.
Yes.
Or the flows.
Yes.
I don't know what the good one would be out of those. Probably the flows.
Yes.
I really love the flows.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, and yeah, I don't know. I just think it's fab. But let's talk a little bit about the lyrics.
Okay. I mean, this is where
I think that's an interesting,
I go back and forth like within specific songs. So let's, I don't know, how about the tennis song, which is a great duet and is like the sort of duet that if it showed up at a 54 Below cabaret, I'd be like, ah, yes, awesome, you've picked something that people don't know a lot about but is like really cleverly written. And so, you know, they're talking about tennis, but they're not talking about tennis. They're talking about sex, but it's about tennis.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an innuendo duet akin to, you know, You're the Top or Friendship, from Anything Goes, which is great. But then it has some lazy rhyming in it, which rubs me the wrong way. You know, you seem at home on the court. Let's say that I've played around. Great, we're setting up the innuendo. Well, you don't look like the sort. You're just that. That is a forced rhyme to me. Like, well, you don't.
Do you think
a little bit like this? This song has these kind of side. Like, what's another similar one?
What I would say, lazy rhyming in that song would be the repetition of court.
Right. They should have picked a song you can, or a word you can rhyme more with, because like, I'm good for more than one set, but I promise I'll show no regret if you beat me. My backhand is really my fort. Shall we say the ball is in your court? Right. It's funny. It's a funny joke. And but the ball being in your court is not specifically a tennis metaphor about sex in this particular moment, as good as my backhand is clearly my fort. Like, they've hidden their best jokes not in the last line of the stanza.
I think you're being really picky here.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? I think to say that that is bad is unfair.
I want it to be better because the other parts are better. Like, there are interior parts of the song that are better than the repeated chorus parts, or than like the punchline similar rhyme at the end of stanzas. And flip that. Put your good work where it matters.
Okay.
You know, it bugs me. It's not something that I'm like, ah, City of Angels, the worst. But it's the sort of thing where, like, I listen to the tennis song, I'm like, oh, I like this. I wish it was a little better.
Okay. That's so interesting, because the tennis song is probably one of the bigger songs from the show.
Right. So, like, I think I understand your racket. I'm not in your league, but you can hack it. Fine. This game commences with love. Very funny. Very punny. Great. Well, I think love is a bore. Still great. Let's give the tempo a shove and raise the stakes a bit more. Throwaway lines. Unnecessary. Let's give the tempo a shove. Are we making a musical reference? I don't think tempo is a tennis term, unless it's a really deep tennis term. And even if it is, it's not a common enough one that me, layperson musical theater listen to, can understand your reference. And then and raise the stakes a bit more. This is just a throwaway line so you can get the rhyme. One thing I'm positive of, it's time for someone to score. You're setting up your punchline. Pick a better rhyme than more. Like, these sorts of things bug me.
Yeah, but
it's a sort of,
I can't come on to, because I think I think I understand your record. I'm not your league, but you can hack it. Like, that's good.
That's good.
That's a good rhyme.
Right.
But that's like a really good rhyme.
Right. And
do you know what I mean?
And so then when they get to, let's give the tempo then, a shove and raise the stakes a bit more. I want it to be good as Racket and Hackett. Like,
yeah, but that's less lyrical and more. Still, because obviously they're being like, hey, fourth wall break, let's come towards the end of the song. Do you know what I mean? Because we've been repeating ourselves for a long time in this melody.
Yeah.
We're driving towards the end. I mean,
but like, skip it, you know? This game commences with love. Well, I think love is a bore. One thing I'm positive of, it's time for someone to score. Like, you don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
You can totally cut it. And the song is just as funny. You know, it feels like a rough draft. And I feel
I don't know. I think you're being overly harsh. I don't think it's a rough draft at all. I think there's too much good in it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, Sondheim also has throwaway lines.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
I think fewer so.
The best
though.
Writers always have throwaway lines.
I think fewer so. I think you can go through Into the Woods with a pretty fine tooth comb, and it would be hard to come across something that doesn't at least serve two or three purposes. Whereas, like, let's give the tempo a shove and raise the stakes a bit more. Their little internal rhymes in there, we're not telling you anything about the character, we're not telling you anything about the plot. We're, like, repeating a musical phrase to build up tension in the song, maybe. But that's about it.
Oh,
I know. I feel bad that I don't like it. I just want it.
I don't know. I worry that that's looking for problems. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe. But that's what we...
Because I'm sure, like...
But that's what we do.
Yeah. But then, I don't know, I feel like there's shows that we've done where we would sing their praises and not look at the faults because we just love them so much. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe for me, then, maybe this is what I'm feeling, and maybe at the beginning, too. It's tiny things like this that happen over and over throughout this musical that make it, you know, B minus, B plus, and why it's not as... why it doesn't come across as stunning as it should be. Because for every stunning, interesting rhyme, there's a throwaway line in the same song. And like with one more look through with a little tune up that, you know, it tightens the ship. And like...
But wouldn't that lift it from great to perfect?
Yes. I mean, bad musicals are made up of tiny bad moments. Bad musicals that are this successful, I'm not saying this is a bad musical, musicals that have like unsuccessful moments, generally it's not because one big thing is wrong with them. It's because a bunch of tiny little things are wrong with them. And like the tiny little things in this one are fixable. The tiny little things in this one like are the things you work out during previews. And, you know, based on production research history, it doesn't seem like this was particularly rushed or like this is the thing they were like, this is the one.
Not at all, but I think it's obvious that work's gone into it because there are so many really smart rhymes and lyrics throughout the whole show. Do you know what I mean? It's not just, oh, here's my good lyric song, here's my patter song. Like, there's so much innuendo. The comedy is really on point.
Yeah.
Their internal rhymes are insane. Like, so, so good. And again, throughout, across the board... I think that's so commendable.
Yeah. Okay. So let's say another one I wrote down, Lost and Found. Short little song, actually, sung slow because it's a ballad. Teasing lips, pleasing thighs, easy on private eyes is a really funny joke, right? And it's
definitely.
And it's not a haha joke. It's like a clever joke because it's like, easy on the eyes is a saying. I'm going to take all the humor out by walking through the comedy of it, right? But easy on the eyes is a saying. He is a private eye. He's a private investigator. Easy on private eyes. Like, that's great. When sung, because it's such an extended ballad, you miss some of the comedy in that joke because of the musical phrasing of easy on private eyes or whatever the heck it is. It takes a long time
I didn't
to
miss
get
it. I thought it, I don't know, I didn't miss it. I got it.
All right, maybe I'm stupid.
No, I don't think you're I don't think you're stupid. I think you're just looking for the it's like you're fine tooth combing it and finding those nits.
Yeah, but I mean
just like nibbling on the scalp.
But it feels like something about this show doesn't quite fit. Maybe to me, maybe just to me. But like,
maybe that's it.
Something about...
No, I'm sure there will be people that do agree with you because it doesn't get performed.
Right.
Do you know
but
what
like,
I mean?
And so there... it feels doubly sad because, you know, what is it like the ending of What You Don't Know About Women? Like,
right.
Like it's wonderful. It's great. And like, put that energy.
The buddy system, so fun.
Yeah. Put that energy into the everything. You know, don't let.
I think it's there. That's so funny. I think it's there. Huh. Do you know what I mean?
Fascinating.
Like, I forgo. A lot of the, I guess what you would regard as throwaway lyrics. But even then, I don't think there's vast amounts of them in here.
I don't think there's vast amounts.
Especially compared to other shows.
Yeah. Maybe that's why they stick out to me more, is because everything else seems very meticulously placed. And so you end up with some of these tiny throwaway moments.
Like, just like even the whole conceit of something like It Needs Work.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The whole song is double entendre.
Yeah.
Like, that's so smart.
Yeah.
It's so smart. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I just feel there's too. It's. You know what I mean? To say that.
You think
I'm
being too harsh.
Yeah, I do. I do.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, it is your opinion, and there will 100% be people that agree with you. But I don't know. I think to think, well, I'm not going to listen to that one because the lyrics aren't that great. You're going to miss out on so many amazing lyrical moments.
Right. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? To just kind of to say there's a bad point, so I'm going to ignore.
I think,
do you know what I mean?
I wonder, and this, I mean, you know this, but it's worth saying. These are, this is like an opinion I'm still figuring out in my mind.
Yeah.
So like, it's still in progress. So like another one I thought about, and this one I don't have an explicit opinion about, but is somewhere near these things I've been talking about. It needs work. Your fiction has always had a little grit in it, a little heart in it, a little wit in it. It used to be so clear that there was art in it. If you had written it, so you must go and spit in it and come to think of it. Your writing always mirrors our relationship. We're rhyming in it over and over and over again. It's an identity rhyme. And identity rhymes like this are often the sorts of things that I would call lazy rhyming. I like this one because it keeps happening and happens more than just once or twice.
Yeah, it's intention.
And this song is filled with these kind of identity rhymes.
Like this song has my favorite rhyme and probably up there in one of my favorite lines in musical theater of all time. Forever is you're fertilized, don't fertilize in his work. Like, come on.
Yeah. Well, and what makes you're fertilized, don't fertilize work, it's literally the next thing. But with dangers cropping up and sweet young strangers popping up like weeds, so if you if you wish official pardoning, you better do a little gardening. We're already setting up this gardening metaphor. You needn't be so generous with your seeds. Double meaning there, and then with the punchline, your fertile lies won't fertilize. It's great. It's and like has
it's
the setup
masterful
to the rhyme.
I think it's masterful.
Right? So like in a musical with that, when you have this game commences with love, I think love's a bore. Let's give the tempo a shove and raise the stakes a bit more. It makes me
That's two rhymes, and but they serve an artistic purpose as opposed to lyrical wit purpose. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, as in we're gunning towards the end here. It's that wink to the audience. Like, I realize we've been going on a bit in this song of this back and forth. We're going to increase the speed.
But in it,
you know, you could kind of put it into a match because the tempo of the back and forth of a racket. Do you know what I mean?
See, and like, you're going, as much as I've gone very far to find this little nitpicky thing, I feel like now you're going even further to find a way to justify it, you know? It should be...
Well, but I don't have anything wrong with it, so I'm trying to bring you to the point of being like, okay, that, do you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that'll be
it. It's a part in the show where those two lines could have been anything, and this is what they picked. And it's, you know, a simple, unthought-out choice.
Okay.
That's what bothers me, I guess.
Well, we'll get in touch with David Zippel, and he will
we'll let him know.
Let us know what the hell he was thinking about when he did those atrocious two lines. Goodness gracious.
I bet you like to play rough.
I like to work up a sweat.
And you just can't get enough.
I'm good for more than one set. But I promise I'll show no regret if you beat me.
My backhand is clearly my forte.
Shall we say the ball is in your court? No one ever plays with me.
I thought your next of kin did.
My husband never plays with me. He's too easily winning.
Breathless too.
Wait till our match is through.
I may lack form and finesse, but I warm up in a jiff.
It's not exciting unless the competition is stiff.
I think I understand your racket. I'm not in your league.
But you can hack it.
This game commences with love.
Well, I think love is a bore.
Let's give the tempo a shove.
And raise the stakes a bit more.
One thing I'm positive of, it's time for someone to score. Tell me how you like to play.
On grass or clay and every day.
They're both okay.
But time is running short.
closing rally.
Shall we say the ball is in your court?
I think with this show, so the awful, abysmal lyrics aside, and again, another reason, excuse me, well, another reason why I think it's a shame that it doesn't get performed more is the many millions of opportunities for creatives out there.
Yes.
Right? A really good example, because obviously, you know, technology is a wonderful thing and it grows at an exponential rate. So productions in their original day, even if it was something like the 90s, are going to look very, very different nowadays.
Yeah.
So a really nice example is looking at the Donmar revival and seeing if you can see some pictures from that, because they do some amazing stylistic things there, and really kind of utilizing modern technology.
It's very projection-y and kind of video screen-y, or am I thinking of a different
direction? they use a lot of projection work, which is a great way to kind of show off the movie aspect of it, you know what I mean? But just, you know, the way that lighting is developed, you know, if you think about something like Ghost, which, you know, if you can tour Ghost and have a blue guy on the stage walking around, like, we're in a good place where you can do something interesting with a black and white movie. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So from a design perspective, you've got a feast.
Yes.
A feast right there. And also, you know, the 1940s isn't an era that gets touched on too much in musical theater.
I guess that's pretty true. I've never thought about
it. Do you know what
I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's a strange one because we have the 30s in all of its decadence, and then we jump to the 50s.
Yeah.
And the 40s, that kind of, I guess because it is wartime.
Right. So there's not a lot of, so, if, unless it's a war musical.
Unless it's about war. Right. Yeah, exactly. So, but to, you know, dip into this really kind of sexy film noir aesthetic, which is extremely typical of the 40s, I think is really cool. So you've got a lot of chance to play with that, with your set design, which is great. On an acting front,
Oh, it's
how much fun would
cake.
This be?
Yeah, like everyone plays two characters except for Stein and Stone. And to bounce back and forth, and how are you going to make them just similar enough but different enough?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because everyone wants to, you know, if you're an actor, you want to play as cool things as you possibly can and as many things as you possibly can.
Right.
So, you know, if you can get two three-dimensional characters given to you that you can kind of have a lot of fun with, that are similar but very contrasting, that's so much fun. Do you know what I mean? That's such a feast.
Yeah.
So that's great. Choreographically.
Yes. Especially with the kind of jazz Coleman underneath sort of stuff.
Yeah. And very kind of very interesting music in a kind of complex way. So if you were a choreographer, it's not just your typical rhythm.
Yeah. Well, and it's,
do you know what I mean?
It's the kind of show that calls for choreography, but never a dance break.
Yeah.
And so it's,
so you're happy.
Well, that wasn't going to be my point. It's that to me makes it a challenge. Whereas like a dance break, a dance break is a feast. Like, you know, you have this many measures. It needs to be vaguely related to what's happening, but that's about it. Make it more related if you can, but who cares? Whereas like this sort of thing where all the there are moments where we should be dancing, but it needs to be about very explicitly about the story that's happening right now. It's a challenge.
Yeah, and but there's I think there's also moments where it can be super stylistic.
Yeah,
because obviously, you know, we're looking at a movie in real life,
right?
So, you know, you've been given the stylistic card straight away from the get-go. It's like, go have fun,
right?
I think that's really great and an exciting thing. And then finally with the music. I mean, holy moly, I don't know. I just imagine this would be an MD's dream.
It's great.
I mean, it might be their nightmare because it's really bloody hard. But I don't know. For me, I would just want to sink my teeth into it and just really play around, because obviously one of the most iconic things about film noir is the music. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? That's really what you think about.
Yeah.
When you think that, you think about that dirty saxophone.
That kind of like underscoring. Yeah, that is, that makes the genre.
Exactly. And it's very... very dramatic, and it tells its own story. Mm-hmm. And if you're an MD, you can get to play with that so much. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? To work out, well, what story am I going to tell with the music?
Yeah.
And then the final. the what are they called? The Angel Four?
Yeah.
The Four Angels?
The doo-wop group?
Right.
They're like the school board of this show from Music Man.
Right.
Yeah.
Angel City 4, that's what they're called.
Yeah.
So, like, what?
What a great concept and idea to, like, put the sound in your musical in an in-world kind of way.
Absolutely. Like, I don't know enough about history to know how that fits into the time period.
It feels...
Do you know what I mean?
I mean...
Because it's like Barbershop Plus.
Yeah, it's like doo-wop-y scat jazz.
It is, yeah, it is. That's it, exactly. But, like, did they ever do that in...
The four...
In four, so, like, I mean, four-part close harmony?
The weird... I don't think it would ever have been quite as complex. I think what strikes me as weird about it, it feels somewhat 40s, but not very film noir.
Yeah. I guess it's kind of Andrew's sisters, eh?
Yeah, exactly. But you'd never have the Andrews sisters singing in the background of a film noir movie.
No, exactly. Exactly.
But this does it well. Like, it something about it fits. Like, everybody's got to be somewhere. And those, like, you know, four-part dissonant harmonies they hit at the end of those notes, or, like, when they all, like, slide off.
Talk about
them.
An earworm. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I that stays in my head.
Super catchy.
And just the overture, the kind of overture, right. I guess, the scat overture, it sets you up right from the get-go.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, and again, to defend it again, mm-hmm. like, if I was sat in a theater and out popped four cats and they started scatting an overture, uh-huh. I'd be like, I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
I mean,
do you know what I mean? Like, that would blow my face off.
I feel like
if it was done well.
It's a double-edged sword, the music of this show.
Yeah.
Because it is so complex. It is complex and catchy and difficult to hum.
And
I think that is, for better or for worse, one of the death knells of a musical. You know. But,
it does have a couple of moments. Because, like, You're Nothing Without Me.
Yeah, that's the thing you can hum.
Is the
tennis song.
Is the finale that Catch Me If You Can wishes it had.
Right, exactly.
I think it's a complete copycat. Sorry, but that's a different story.
Yeah, but then you get, you know, parts of You Don't Know About Women are very, very catchy and hummable. And then the ending bit, the lyrics of which I'll never know, you know.
No, no one will ever.
Right? No idea.
Exactly.
It's wonderful. Can't hum it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That I can only imagine. Like, see if you're performing that. And I'd be interested to know, actually, if any of our listeners have ever
done
an amateur show. Because, like, I've never seen anyone do
this on an
amateur
level. I haven't either. It feels very college appropriate. Big cast, uh-huh. lots of female roles, not very well done. Not very often done, rather. Like, stuff to research. You could talk about film noir till your eyes are blue. With this sort of thing. But no, I've never... Very rarely.
I guess there's not a big chorus.
Yeah, maybe
there's
that's it.
There's not a big chorus.
Yeah, it's a show of leads.
Right. Huh. You know, and I think that's fine. But I do find it very interesting. But no, I would love to know if any of our listeners did do this show, and if any of our listeners played Gabby and Uli.
Mm.
And just to know how the hell you managed
maybe,
to do that.
Maybe there aren't words at that ending bit, and they've just been baffling us for years.
It just sounds like sounds.
Yeah, exactly.
It just sounds that make a word like noise.
Yeah.
Yeah, potentially. Because, like, the fact that, as well, it's like close harmony.
Right.
Right? With extremely intricate close harmony.
Yeah.
With difficult lyrics. Like, that must just be one of those moments in theatre where you just raid on it. You're just like, I'm just going to dive in. Yep. Did I do it? Doesn't matter. It's the end.
Right. Close enough. It is.
Do you know what I mean?
I did find it really interesting. What You Don't Know About Women was both the Tony Award song, and it looked like the 2014 Olivier's, maybe.
Right.
Some, like, the... This is a thing I always find so fascinating. It's like, what from this show are you going to present as the one song that you're going to convince your biggest audience to, like, come see your thing? Like, what are you going to showcase from this? And that What You Don't Know About Women is what they picked is interesting because it's not about Stone or Stein. And, like, in each one, they have to, like, end cap it with tiny little scenes about the actual main characters so that we can pretend this is a musical about these people. It's always fascinating to me.
Yeah. Well, do you know, it's an interesting thing about the women in this show. Mm. We love our women.
Yes.
We love our feminist shows. And I'm not going to say that City of Angels is the height of feminist literature.
No, I don't think so.
But it does have some nice, interesting moments. And to be honest, film noir as a genre really plays an interesting card into the feminism debate.
Yeah.
Because it kind of gave birth to the femme fatale.
Yes.
It gave birth to I'm a woman in the driving seat and I'm using my sexuality. Yeah.
And there's, I mean, it's ripe, consciously ripe for debate and problems. The idea of, like, you know, a woman using her sex appeal as power is either fabulous or awful, depending upon how you look at it.
Exactly. And, you know, often she's using her sex appeal to cover up the fact that she's committed murder.
Right.
You know, I guess you could.
Or, like, there's that. There's the imbalance of, like, you'd never see a guy walking into a PI's office and be like, so what do you think? And, like, slowly unbuttoning his shirt. Like, that's not.
I mean, I would be into that.
I think that would be a fabulous film noir that someone should make, but I don't know if it exists.
It probably does, isn't it? City of, what would you call that? City of Angels.
Oh God, done. I'm dead. That's it.
That was good. Interesting. I'll put it in the show notes. The director of the Donmar production wrote a really good article. It's like a preview for the show. She kind of talks about her motivations for doing it. And why, you know, why she, because it's the first musical she'd ever directed, and why she picked City of Angels to do. Because you wouldn't pick, you know what I mean?
No,
you,
one, like,
you
wouldn't look at the cards of musicals and be like, City of Angels. Right.
Here we go. Yeah. So she gives her own justifications as to why she goes about it. It's quite interesting. So I implore y'all to have a read there. But I mean, I would say do it. Like, if you've got a little theater community, if you can fill the parts,
go for it. It'll be fun.
Because it would be so fun, and people, it just is a way to add things to your portfolio, to add to your repertoire as a learning curve.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much for you to do here.
And also, I don't know if you ever feel this. I don't know if I've ever talked about this, but it's a thing I feel. It's like, it's like a librarian feeling sad for the books that don't get checked out very often, and then, like, checking them out just for fun so that, like, they get off the shelf for a little bit. And there's definitely some personification of inanimate objects going on in here. But when you put on a piece of art that people don't put on very much, I think there's worth in that too, because, like, it keeps it alive. And then that many more people have heard about the thing to bring it forward in their lives, and, like, keeps it awake. And, you know, it's easy for art to die if no one does it, especially in this kind of world where our art exists in doing.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, you really do need, you need to champion the things you love.
Yeah. Well, and, like, even, philosophical posturing aside, like, just as far as the musical theater business works, MTI or Sam French or whoever licenses this show, if people don't do it enough, eventually the license will languish and they won't put the effort into keeping it, you know, keeping a box somewhere with the City of Angels scripts in them.
Exactly.
We're certainly far off from that happening, but it's worth it for people to perform these things.
Totally. So if you like it, Do it. If you like it, do it.
I'm nothing without you. No hero,
a zero, that's me.
With you by my side,
there's no better guide on how to be all I can be. I'm nowhere without you. To doubt you is where I went wrong. The script calls for fusing and using our smarts, and greatness can come of the sum of our parts. From now on I'm with you, and with you is where I belong.
So Tommy, that was City of Angels.
That was City of Angels, Jimmy.
Your least favorite musical.
Untrue. Cats is
you
worse.
Hate it so much. Cats is worse. Even I would agree with that.
See? See.
But I ain't saying Cats is bad. Ha ha ha.
I don't know how we remain friends.
exactly. I know. Nobody knows. It's like, did you didn't watch Lost, did you?
No, I got lost after the first season. Ha!
Hey, cool. Well, I won't finish that statement. Would you like to know what we're doing next week?
Absolutely.
Hey, Tommy, next week's really special.
Yes. Why?
Do you know why?
I do.
Okay, fine. Read my mind.
No, why is next week special, Jimmy?
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have a special guest.
What?
Right? How exciting is that? We're going to get some an actual person with knowledge.
Right, not just us.
Right. An expert in the field is going to be joining us.
You make it sound like they're an expert in the field, like they're going to be like a biologist or something.
Hey, that's me. I'm the one with the biology degree. No, they have a degree in music. So that's, you know, you can't get more expert than
that's
that.
True. That's true.
But what would we be talking about? Well, let's find out, shall we?
You've got a quiz question for us, don't you?
I do. It starts off with a fact.
What?
Tommy.
Fact, quiz, question, all in one.
A quiz. Tommy, did you know that famous composer John Williams, the man, worked on arranging the score for the 1971 film version of Fiddler on the Roof?
Ooh, how interesting.
Did you know that?
I know that now.
You do? We've talked about Fiddler on the Roof though, so we ain't gonna be doing that.
No.
Look, we'll listen to the Fiddler on the Roof podcast, everyone. Now, to our knowledge, he's only ever arranged one other song from musical theatre to appear in a film. The song is the title song of next week's musical.
What a question.
What a question. And what a song.
That's true. What a song.
Hmm.
What could it be? Who knows?
I don't know.
If you would like to get in contact with either of us, I'm Musical Mash on Twitter, Musical Theater Mash on YouTube.
And I am As in Hendrix on Twitter and YouTube. And you can get in touch with us both over on Twitter at Jim and Tomic.
Or you can go to our website, jimandtomic.com, which has a link to the Reddit discussion, which is a thing you should check out.
Absolutely. I think we're starting to recruit more and more people to Reddit. So we work something out there.
Probably. Hey, dear Reddit, send money.
Yeah, I think that's how it works, right? I think that's how it works. And we would love you to go and tell your friends, and hey, by the way, people who have left us reviews.
You're so nice.
You're so nice. We were cheesing.
Last week.
Absolutely cheesing.
Cheesing?
Very, very nice.
That's a word you made
cheesing.
Up.
Cheesing. Yeah, like cheesing, like, ah.
It's not, like, it sounds like you're making cheese. I'm cheesing. Just churning this.
I did make cheese as an aside. I just did pasteurize some milk and stuff.
Well,
like
there
that.
You go. Did you do it while you were reading iTunes reviews?
Well, I was cheesing reading iTunes reviews. Yeah, exactly.
You're such a double cheeser.
Thank you. And if you would like to leave us a review, if you feel compelled to, that would be really nice too. And then we can cheese all over you too.
Gross.
I know.
I think that's it.
That's it. So we shall see you next Wednesday.
Ta-da!
Ciao! then when the heron landed, they wanted me to leap away and then swim. And to do that, I had to put myself into a like headstand or like a neck stand, really. And then kick my legs like that. So it looks like I was swimming down. And I couldn't do that.
Well.
So there you go. And I tried very hard and I almost broke my neck. And that was when they were like, you can just hop away. And I was like, thank
like,
you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for letting me not injure myself.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.